Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You are listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source, and amateur radio, for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Cheryl, W5MOO, Russ, K5TUX, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello everybody and welcome. You have tuned in to episode number 597 of Linux in the Ham Shack, the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. Thank you for being here. We really appreciate that. And tonight is our deep dive episode. So we have a deep, we're going to call it a medium deep dive into our topic for tonight. But before we get into that topic, we will introduce ourselves. For the On Assignment, Cheryl, W5MOO, I'm Russ, K5TUX.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD.
All right, so a couple of weeks ago, I got an email, and I think I asked if you got it, and you said you didn't, from Mike Fisher, KG4VDK, who said he was the developer of a Linux distribution that was ham radio focused, and he called it ArcOS Linux. For amateur radio community operating system, and wondered if we would be interested in taking a look at it and talking about it. And since it is, as could only be defined properly, Linux in the Ham Shack, we definitely had to do it because, you know, that's what we do here. And so I downloaded a copy of it. Bill downloaded a copy of it. We played around with it. And tonight we are going to discuss it. And when we get down to the end of our discussion, we will give ArcOS Linux a Linux in the Ham Shack readiness score. So I will first read the little blurb that's on the webpage about ArcOS Linux, which says, the amateur radio community operating system is a bootable live Linux system on a USB drive built to just work, quote unquote, with the affordable Digirig mobile device. We'll start by saying that it works with more than the Digirig mobile device, but special consideration given to it, presumably because the author uses them. ArcOS is founded on the belief that digital communications within communities of operators can be accessible and easy to use for all, regardless of license class or experience. So I was sort of ignoring the fact that this said it was a live bootable system. And the first thing that I intended to do with it was download it, put it on a USB stick, and then install it, which you can do according to the documentation. But there are several caveats with that. And the intended purpose is that this runs from a USB stick. This immediately turned me off because I don't like, I mean, I like the idea of live bootable systems, but I like them for the purpose of using them as installers, not as actually running the OS from the USB stick. So I was immediately going to be disappointed with this distribution. However, as we'll learn in a little bit, I have changed my mind. I am not disappointed with ArcOS Linux, even though it uses a distribution or is based on a distribution and a desktop environment that I have all but forgotten. It's a Linux Mint derivative, which uses Cinnamon as a desktop environment. However, the cleanliness of the desktop experience and the customizations that are done to it, I actually really like. It doesn't feel to me like Cinnamon on Mint. It feels like a thing unto itself, and I that's a plus for me. Some time was actually obviously put into developing this UI and the look and feel of it. So for that, you know, I appreciate that some real effort was put into customizing this to look good. So back to the original commentary. Yes, this runs off the USB stick. I had a thumb drive just lying around, a 64 gigabyte one. So I did my little DD, shoved this onto the drive, put it into my computer, and it worked pretty well. The thing that I noticed when I tried to do this using my Pixie bootloader, iVentoy, is that it also worked just fine. And I found somewhere in the documentation that said that the latest version of ArcOS Linux was, what's the word I'm looking for? Like tested with iVentoy and said to be known to work. However, earlier versions, which presumably you wouldn't use anyway, may not be compatible with that sort of boot scenario. When I did this on my desktop using iVentoy, it booted up fine. It went through the installer fine. There is a little installer where it sets it up for a user because it really is ham radio focused. Instead of, you know, setting up your customizations and stuff like that for the desktop environment, it actually sets up your call sign, grid square, location, and that kind of thing. And it uses that information for the applications that are installed on it. But when I did that, I noticed that even though the desktop came up fine, as soon as it started displaying like the applications, and I think it uses Conky for like information in the lower right of the root window.
Yeah.
As soon as it did that, the taskbar went away and it did not come back.
Oh no.
I could get to it. I could get to the launcher by hitting the Windows key or super key. And I could, you know, I could launch applications that way, but I could not bring the taskbar back up. However, when I plugged this into an old, really crappy HP laptop, it worked flawlessly. And that's where I find this thing really shines, because that piece of junk laptop that I put this thing on to use to test out with, it's, I can't remember what the processor is, but it's like a Celeron, I think, or something like that, or maybe even pre-Celeron, because it was it's a 2015, 2016 era laptop with 4 gigs of RAM. And of course, hard drive doesn't matter because this thing runs off the USB stick. But I'll tell you what, the performance on the laptop was really rather good. And even running off the USB drive, I had no issues with it. So that's when things started to turn for me, and I actually started to like ArcOS Linux and actually wanted to go play around with stuff. But before we get into like what's on it and, you know, what's available and what you can do with it, I'll let Bill sort of fill in his initial impressions.
Yeah. So I did the very similar thing. I popped it on my Ventoy thumb drive and booted it up on my little test laptop here. And it came up and it everything ran well, with some caveats. I'll get to those eventually. And, you know, as my ham radio station right now, the Shack computer actually is running Linux Mint with Cinnamon on it. It was quite striking, the differences. So they were easy to pick up for me. I was like, oh, this is interesting, because yeah, they look completely different. So it's definitely been, themed up a little bit and made to work for this particular application and stuff like that. The things it has a weird startup. Like, so when you first boot into it, of course, it wants you to add your session. If you have a persistent setup on your thumb drive, then you would be able to save your settings and everything else and do backups to that persistent storage. So that's kind of nice. I don't have that set up on mine. Did you do the persistent storage on your little 64 gig thing?
It honestly did it all by itself. It came up, and when I entered my call sign and all that and went through the initial login screen, it showed in the lower left corner that there was no persistent storage. And then it just kind of started doing stuff, and then there was persistent storage. It took the rest of the drive and made that partition, and I was able to do backups and everything. So it just did it.
Okay, well, it definitely won't do it on a Ventoy drive. So, but that's fine. Mine definitely says no persistent storage in the area there. Yeah, I was, I don't know if I want to go over the things I don't like about it.
I think we should cover everything, including dislikes as well as likes.
Yeah. I don't like the custom icons for the individual applications.
Applications are basically all the same.
Well, they actually have wording on the icons.
Right, so, right. But it's just a circle with the name of the thing. It's not an icon per se.
Yeah. If I were one of the app developers and I saw someone did that and didn't necessarily request to do that, I would probably have a problem with that. I don't like that. I also think aesthetically it's sort of confusing at that point. If you're used to seeing the icons for the applications, like I'm just kind of, noodling through the menu and then I just see a bunch of gray circles and stuff like that, or gray squares or whatever the hell they are. Gray circles. Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like how everything is capitalized, like somebody had their caps lock stuck on all their config stuff. So I don't know. That might just be me. I did plug a rig into this. As you probably all know, I use FL Digi for all my control stuff. So that's the first thing I did, was set up FL rig for my rig control. And then I was like, I'll load up WSJTX, and I couldn't get WSJTX to use FL rig as its rig control, which was kind of weird because it works fine on mine the same way. So something must be slightly off there, and I'm not sure if it's just because, don't have the full setup here with the persistent storage or something like that. Maybe there's some other post config that is blocking that particular server and client from running properly or communicating. I didn't really dig into it. I tried changing the settings several times and it just wouldn't talk to it. So I just ignored it and just moved on and stuff like that. But that definitely didn't work for at least my workflow that I use on my other system. Other than that, I'm still confused about the Vera thing. I'm not real familiar with that stuff, and not specifically interested in why there's a fee associated with that or a license specifically for Vera. I'm certain that's a WinLink thing, and I don't care about it. But yeah, other than that, I mean, everything else is fairly plain Jane. Linux Mint Cinnamon, all the stuff is pretty much up to date. That's nice. Definitely a good curation of software is on here. I did notice that the SDR stuff is slightly limited. I only saw GQRX and GNU Radio. I didn't see SDR +++ or any some of the more advanced applications that allow you to do some other stuff pre-built in there. But hey, it's not bad. I guess it's okay for a start, if for what it is, just basically a thumb drive OS.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of feel the same way. It's pretty clear from the documentation and from the information from the distro itself that it is designed for really portable or field ops. It's not something you would generally use in a home shack. I think they try to make it relatively clear that that's the purpose of this. And for that, I can definitely see the way it's set up. Now, if you go through the little information PDF that is included with it, it's in the home directory. And if you read through that, it does say that you can install apps. You have to put them in a special place in the persistent storage area of your thumb drive. So it does have the option of allowing you to run stuff that it doesn't come natively with. I also tried doing the core file update procedure, which actually worked just fine. It ran the installation, rebooted, and came back up with no issues. I see that it doesn't seem to persist things like the Wi-Fi network. Every time I rebooted the machine, I had to set that back up again. I don't know if that's a bug, a feature, or something I'm doing wrong, but regardless, if you set a Wi-Fi and then you reboot, you have to set it up again, or at least I had to. Didn't particularly like that. That's the kind of thing where if you have persistent storage, I would like it to persist.
Seems reasonable.
But otherwise, I didn't really have any issues with it. One thing I did notice, and I'm totally going to go into the guts of this and steal it, is it apparently has a working Pat Winlink and RDOP configuration set up in it, which is something that always troubles me and I have a hard time getting working. So I'm going to see what he did to get it working. And I did test it with the Telnet version of Winlink using Pat, and it worked just fine. And it does have RDOP as RDOP and Direwolf for doing HF com and stuff like that. Now, the thing about Vera is that's a Windows application. So to use it in Linux, of course, you're going to have to use Wine. And it is a paid application. It's a paid sound modem that is often used for Winlink. And I assume that the money he wants for it allows him to give you a license for Vara, which you could get on your own just by going through Vara and then setting it up, because Vara is included in ArcOS Linux. But if you want to sort of not deal with that, I guess, you can pay and it will get set up for you in some sense. But again, you don't really need any of that because you can use Winlink with RDOP, which is also included, and that doesn't cost anything. So I guess it's just for people who like Vara and use it and want to continue to do so. Steve made a comment earlier about the installation being a live boot. He says bootable makes sense for toolkits, and I could see it for someone to play, but definitely not production Shackbox. And yes, I totally agree with that. And I think I said basically the idea is I don't think this is supposed to be your home dedicated Shackbox. This is like if you're going to do what I did, throw it on a laptop, take it with you, do some field ops, POTA, whatever. That's kind of what it's designed for. So I think I cut you off. You were going to say something about something.
Well, I was just, like I say, I don't know much about this Vera thing. And I was just noticing I just had it install it just for, giggles or whatever. And it installed it under a Wine prefix, a 32-bit Wine prefix, which I thought was kind of sus, considering that I don't think we're supposed to be running 32-bit applications in Windows anymore. So I was kind of confused as to why it was set up that way, unless this Vara thing is just a 32-bit only, or there's something weird about it. I don't have the context for that, but I did think it was kind of weird that it was using 32-bit Wine prefix for it.
Yeah, I did some digging around on Vara, and I found some conflicting information. There are some recent downloads or some recent download links that sort of indicate that Vara might be a recent application or that there might be recent development for it. But the last thing I saw when it came to actual mentions of updates and stuff like that was 2020. So I'm not entirely sure if Vara is a current thing. I mean, I'm assuming people are still paying for it and using it, but I don't know how current of an actual application it is. It's kind of like with the HamVoice stuff I'm using for All-Star Link. They stopped developing it in 2022, so I think it's time to move my stuff to the new thing, which I've been forward doing, but
yeah,
that's neither here nor there. So
I see downloads on the Winlink site for Vara, which are dated 9/12/2025. So, I mean, it seems like it's probably they have more recent versions or whatever. But yeah, I just thought it was installing on a 32-bit base, which, is not supported in Windows 11, which should be the only thing that's viable these days.
Right. But I mean, it does have a fair amount of applications for ham radio. A lot of them are field ops, kind of centric, but they also do the digital communication type modes. I'm pretty sure FLDigi was on there. You have the SDR stuff like GQRX. It also has, things you don't necessarily need, but probably were too, no reason to remove them. Things like LibreOffice and stuff like that, and GIMP and other things were included on it as well. Just your normal utilities that you might use in your office suite and whatnot. So there were obviously some customizations, and there were obviously some things that were basically ignored in a default Linux install as well. So it wasn't trimmed at all, because the installation ISO is right at 4 gigs. So it's certainly not lean and mean and pared down to the bare essentials. It's a full blown essentially desktop distribution. Cinnamon, like I said, on my laptop, even though it's kind of a dog at this point, it's reasonably quick, and even running off the thumb drive, I had no issues with it. So, let's see, it had Firefox for the browser. The info doc is well worth a read. If you're going to install ArcOS or boot ArcOS and look at it, the documentation in that PDF file that's in the home directory is definitely worth the read. It's very informative, and I appreciate that it's there. It kind of made me appreciate the purpose of the distribution more by reading it. So that's a good thing. Let's see, what else did I want to comment about this thing? I'm trying to think.
But I don't read manuals.
It's not really a manual. It's more like a...
It literally says field manual.
It does say field manual, but it's not written like a manual. It's not necessarily how-tos. It's more like a... It's more like a statement of purpose or a philosophy.
Yeah, I get it. I'm just playing.
Yeah, and he says somewhere in the documentation, I saw RTFM read the field manual. So what else can we say about this? I mean, it's super clean. It looks nice. It functions fine as the live distribution off a USB thumb drive, and I'm pretty sure that 2015 laptop is only USB 2. I didn't have any performance issues at all. And just for the fact that the WinLink stuff is like set up and ready to run, I might use it just to use WinLink and just fire up my laptop, send some emails, and power the thing back off. Just so I don't have to futz around with trying to get WinLink installed on my Arch distribution, because so far it's been kind of a pain. And I don't know if Arch's AUR is experiencing some DOS stuff right now, but I was having a real hard time getting stuff out of the AUR this afternoon. So they may be experiencing some problems like we discussed a few episodes ago.
Yeah. Constant target.
But yeah, the idea is you have to use Direwolf and RDOP, and then Pat sits on top of it. Let's see, how's it go? RDOP does the link to Direwolf, which is the sound modem, and then Pat manipulates RDOP to send the WinLink packets. So you have to have the sound modem part, you have to have the protocol part, the WinLink protocol part, and then you have to have the front end, which is what Pat is. So yeah, it's not super intuitive. It's not, click the EXE file and send email like it is on Windows, for sure. Definitely one of the things that needs to be streamlined. And I do appreciate that somebody has put some effort into making this sort of just work. So I see lots of people like almost chatting in the chat. It's like, ask questions, tell us things, make comments. Because otherwise it's basically just Linux Mint with some customizations and, designed for portable ops, basically. Oh, I did put in to mention the thing about the DigiRig, which apparently is a small rig interface module. I think they're relatively inexpensive. I think they cost like $50 or something. So if for some reason you have a rig that needs one of these, like I guess some of the early like Elecrafts maybe need a sound card interface or something like that, it's designed to just sort of work out of the box with the DigiRig. Like I said, originally probably because the author of ArcOS Linux uses them, I would suspect. DigiRig works fine on Manjaro. Well, I would expect it would work fine with anything, but, wouldn't be much of a sound modem or a rig interface if it didn't. I'm so glad that I've got rigs now where I don't have to break out the rig blasters and the Tigertronics devices anymore and have to mess around with those. They all just have their own built-in USB connectivity, and all of that stuff has sort of gone by the wayside.
Yeah, this is primarily for rigs that don't already have USB connectivity.
Right, exactly. Which is something you might be using out in the field. You might not be, you might not be toting around your massive brand new ICOMs and Yaesus and stuff like that. You might have older, smaller, more portable QRP type devices, which might benefit from something like a DigiRig.
Right, and plus it gets you also hooked up to your HT, because it has adapters to go right into your HT as well.
Right. If you need to do anything that communicates over VHF and UHF, perhaps, instead of HF. Darren says, so you rock up to a group activation, plug in your own headset and USB, and be running your own custom setup. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, this is one of those ones where you can plug it into the hotel computers and just boot up and skip over all the Windows crap that they put on there. So,
don't know if you use it as your like Tails distribution or something like that, but
he says I'm pretty sure the $20 is to unlock the feature, and you'd still need a license for VARA. Well, I hope since he's charging $50, I hope the other $30 of that goes for the license. Let's see. Nope. Still getting beach sand out of the FTX 10 from last group activation. Yes. Not supposed to take those expensive rigs down to where they can get sand in them. So anyway, overall, I think it's good for what it is. Obviously, this is not something you're going to be running in your home shack, your dedicated shack PC. So now we think we have to qualify the LHS readiness score for this. Because normally I think we talk about distributions that you would use in your shack as your day-to-day PC.
Correct.
But I don't think this one qualifies. So I think an LHS readiness score for that purpose would probably be like a 2. Because, I mean, I imagine you could do it. The documentation says there are caveats to running this in an install fashion. And I'm guessing you probably wouldn't want to do that anyway. If you wanted to use this thing as something you can pop into your own computer or someone else's computer to run portable ops and have all of your, you know, saved operating stuff for field use, I'd say it gets closer to like a 4.0 maybe. I think there are some tweaks that could be made to it. I think there's more software that could be included. But otherwise, it's perfectly functional. It's just not, you know, the greatest distro to ever live or anything like
that. Yeah. I kind of agree with Steve. It's like he's saying in the chat that it's disqualified from scoring in his opinion. And, you know, I kind of think the same thing. It's not really something that you would install on your desktop, nor would I recommend you ever doing something that required this much custom configuration to actually get it to work, because it's a one trick pony, basically. It's made for a specific method of being operated. So, I mean, within that context, it's fine on its own with the caveats that we've mentioned, you know, stuff that's not working, stuff that is maybe missing, and perhaps some overreaching on the changing application icons out and stuff like that. But yeah, I would probably give it no score for the home use, and then for its one trick poniness, probably a 3.
All right, fair enough. So that's an average of 3.5. for its stated purpose, and then otherwise basically no score. One thing that's interesting is there's a link to HexChat in there. I don't know if you noticed that, but if you click on it, it puts your call sign straight into Libra IRC chat into the ArcOS Linux channel. So I guess you can get direct tech support from the creator right then and there if you just click on the HexChat button. So I did that, and I was the only one in the chat, so I don't know. I don't know what that tells you, but well,
yeah, I clicked in too. So,
I mean, he was there too, obviously idle or whatever, AFK. But it's not like it was teaming with hams. Let's just say that it's not that old. I think the distribution is only a year to maybe 18 months old, so it hasn't had a lot of time to flesh out. And of course, there's a lot of time for changes, improvements, community suggestions, and so on and so forth, and maybe it will turn into something else. But as it is right now, it's not something that I would use, because I don't really use computers in that way for ham ops. But for someone who does a lot of field work, it might be rather useful.
Yeah, it might be the perfect OS for somebody, that's for sure.
So links to some resources about the DigiRig and ArcOS Linux will, of course, be in the show notes. You can also use Google to find all the information. If you want to give it a try, it's hosted on SourceForge. Just download the ISO, throw it on a thumb drive, and boot it up and see what you think. And with that, we have come down to the next segment of the show, which is announcements and feedback. And we actually did have some feedback. I have been wading through all of the AI-generated comments that come in on the website now. It's just a real pain in the ass. Because a lot of them look really, really, legit, so I have to be pretty resourceful about figuring out what's what. These actually could be AI-generated, too, for all I know. They just happen to use the the name and call sign of a person that I know for a fact listens to the show. So hopefully these are real, but we'll go ahead and read the two that I've got here. The first one is a comment on episode number 594 from Tim, KD0UUU. He said, I enjoyed your coverage of CacheOS so much I downloaded an ISO for my Ventoy collection. That's a perfect thing to do. Seems like a good stable system, so I'll have to test it out on a spare PC to see how it compares to elementary OS for my spouse. I think we need to urge people to go in the Arch direction. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with elementary OS. It's a good stable and especially good for new folks who come into Linux. But the Arch, what they've been doing with Arch lately, makes it very accessible as well between Manjaro and Cache and all the others. So she really likes elementary OS so far, but I'm always open to options. Great work on bringing Linux to the masses. So that's what we try and do. And there's another comment from Tim, KD0UUU, on the next episode, 595. It says, interesting that the small country that you had an issue with an illegal ham license. Did they say which foreign nation the spy was from? Just curious. I don't believe so, but I kind of got the impression he was American. But that's totally inference without evidence. So this was the thing about, what was it, British Guiana or something?
No, Equatorial Guinea.
Equatorial Guinea, that's what it was, yeah. No, I don't believe they stated the nationality of the person in question, but honestly, when I was reading the story, I just assumed it was an American. So I don't know what that tells you about me, but whatever. So yeah, thanks, Tim, for the feedback. We really appreciate it. And as far as announcements, we don't have anything. Just if you can help out the show financially, we'd really appreciate it. You can do that via Patreon, PayPal, by picking up some merchandise, by subscribing over on YouTube, and maybe someday we'll get monetized over there. Who knows? Bill had some count of how many view hours we needed. It was like 600 or something before.
Yeah, we need more. Yeah. we need
more.
A lot more.
I know there's more videos coming, so just make sure you're subscribed over on YouTube and check out the content over there. And I also have the YouTube channel updating in the announcements over on the Discord. So that means Bill can no longer get away with not updating the episodes. Because I'll know now.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I've been busted. No more like me getting like 7 episodes behind on the social media stuff, too. So. It's not like we aren't both guilty of it. All right. I'll let you go down through the list of the social media stuff here. It's a pretty short list. So,
yeah, sure. So this week we had no subscribers and Patreons to be added. No new free Patreons. We had over on Twitter and X, we had at Vista Opportunity. Okay. AVISTEIOPITERNU. That's very long, and I'm sure it makes a word of some sort. On Discord, we had KR4EMG. On Instagram, we didn't have anybody. Over on Mastodon, we had at KJ6LNH, at SA7SKY. On Blue Sky, we had at Radio Amateurs RAC. The mailing list, we had Steven Dix, 10. That's D-I-X, 10. Not Steven's dick. No, just kidding. That's, oh, there goes an explicit tag, damn it. Anyway, over on the live chat, we had Mike K6GTE, Steve KJ5T, Ed N2XDD, Darren VK6EK, and Tony K4XSS.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. We appreciate it. That brings us down to the end of the show, with our show being a deep dive on ArcOS Linux. And if it sounds like anything that's interesting to you, go check it out. The developer is obviously pretty accessible, so if you have any comments or feedback or just want to let me know you really like the distribution, you can do that. And of course, Google is your friend if you need any assistance with it. Otherwise, we'll go ahead and let you get back to whatever it was you were doing, and hopefully we'll see you again in a week's time for our short topics episode. And with that, we're going to go ahead and get on out of here. This has been episode number 597 of Linux in the Ham Shack. And for the On Assignment Cheryl, W5MOO, I'm Russ, K5TUX.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Live recordings are Sunday nights at 8 o'clock Central Time. Our homepage can be found at lhspodcast.info. You can support the podcast via Patreon at patreon.com/lhspodcast. We're also on Discord, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Mastodon. Contact us via email at info@lhspodcast.info or via voicemail at 1909-547-7469. That's 1909-LHS-SHOW. We also have merch. So until next we meet, remember to always heed your hedonism.